How's it going, everyone? Welcome to Free Kick, the AFLW Fantasy Podcast. Got all of our co-hosts here today, and we're very excited that we finished week one of the AFLW. Liam, what was your highlight from the weekend?
That is a tough question because it was a whole week filled with lowlights, in particular that Bombers game. But I will say that I loved watching North smash Brisbane. I thought they ought to have won the premiership last year, and I predicted it. But it was good to see that my prediction that they'll win it this year's got off to a bang.
Yes, well, we've got the next hour to talk about lowlights, especially with Essendon. So I'm glad you started us off on a positive note.
You passed to the wrong person for positivity when my team just lost their captain.
Co-captain. But yes, okay, Will, how are you? What's your highlight from the weekend?
Fantastic. My team also lost. My highlight for the week was actually just Friday night. The doubleheader, two incredible games, the season was back. It was fantastic. I loved that doubleheader on Friday night, watching those two games. It was just so good to have AFLW back.
I agree. We had a lot of fun shit-talking for 4 hours straight while watching the footy, and I thoroughly enjoyed my Friday night. Jono, as someone that's team actually won, how are you feeling?
Oh, I was loving it. The Hawks are in the top four, exactly where we should be. It's a sight to behold. Yeah, no, it's just good having footy back. I love that just records tumble all weekend on the first round of footy because silly things happen. So it's been a lot of fun having footy back. How about yourself, the other victorious side of the coin?
Yes, much like you, I got to go see my side win live in person, which was great. And highlights were that I don't think my heart rate went down for that entire game, the amount of cheering I was doing. And I got to see goals from two Frio friends of the pod right in front of me. We had Laura Pugh do a crafty 360-degree turn before smacking a goal through, which was really fooled everyone, including herself potentially. And then we had Kaufman do a 100-meter soccer. She never really had control of the ball and then just flicked it through from there. So two great goals on top of Anya Tighe's multiple goals. It was a great game. It was a great day. Obviously, some not so great things also happened in that game, which we'll talk about later, but I had a great day. And that's all that matters.
That's the most important thing. Yeah.
It was just great to be able to go out and watch some footy. So, on to our shipping report, our fantasy review of how we went last week. Will, kick us off.
Yeah, my team, Lenina Effect, scored a modest 1,185, which put me just outside the top 2,000, 2,095, and devastatingly short of our good friend Liam over there, who will be coming along shortly. My good call for the week was bringing in Kate Hoard just before the lockout. That turned out to be a very, very good call. Second highest scoring forward for the week. Very happy with that. My bad call, it was hard to distill down all of the bad calls that I made in probably the 24 to 48 hours before submitting my team. But the main one was being a bit concerned about Jess Allen and trading out Jess Allen and Ellie Anderson to bring in Britt Bonici and Lucy Wales, who I was quite keen on after a really strong practice match. And while neither of those two players did terribly bad or anything like that, it did cost me 60 points in the end doing those trades, so not ideal. And I was a bit blindsided by all the injuries this week. And obviously we're going to talk about that quite a bit, but I was one of the 66% of the league that had Bonnie Toogood disappear to a 5, so that's going to be a very interesting thing to discuss how we're going to go about that.
Yeah, I think that blindside applies to all of us here, but you got in first, so good on you for claiming that one there. Yeah, the last minute tinkering as well just before lockout always gets us. Jono, was that your downfall?
It was indeed, yeah. So I was our lowest ranked coach for the week. I had an 1148, which ranked me only 3,816th. A little bit disappointing there. It's the last minute tinkering, as you say, that gets me, because You know how I released my team and then I didn't change it for a good 2 weeks because I was so settled on it. And then team announcements came out and I made all these changes. And I figured out if I hadn't changed my side, I would have scored 1191, and that was with Sheeran putting up a zero. Like,
nice.
What could have been had I just followed what I had been thinking for weeks, you know?
Do a quick sideways trade to literally any other defender, and you've got, you know, 1,000.
Over 1,200, exactly. Yeah. I'd have been the top ranked coach. But no, I had to completely throw out all of my rules. My main one being, you know, be happy with every player on your team. Instead, I've just shuffled around to get players that I think are the right fit rather than players that I love having. And that's just costed me. But that's all right. We move on. And look, I think I had a great weekend down at Kinetic Stadium. So any weekend I get to see the Hawks win is a fantastic one. The thing that blindsided me this weekend, though, was that I have to make a massive apology to you, Mel, because I vetoed Ash McCarthy in our free kick team. What was I thinking? Clearly, I'm all over the place.
The worst part is for you, Jono, is that I put her in, I gave my spiel. You were like, I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm going to veto her anyway.
Yeah. I didn't think she had a ceiling. That was my concern. I thought she was putting up like an 80 on a good day, but 139 was it in the end? That was incredible.
I was excited when she got to the highest score on Saturday night, thinking maybe like a Ghana or Adele or someone will top her. But no, highest score for the whole round.
Yep.
Incredible. And I'm very glad that she plays for Frio because she was incredibly impactful in that game. And that's all I'll say about that. We don't need to dwell on that one. Liam, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I can go next. So the Emeritus Professors scored a enormous 1,186. So I smashed Will, completely annihilated him.
It was devastating, honestly. I can't believe I was outstripped like that. It was just terrible.
Honestly, it came down to a late score adjustment for Ruby Tripodi, who got an extra 4 points after the end of the game that got me up above. So I was very thankful for that. That puts my rank at 2,038, which is about, I think, 1,700 spots lower than where I started last year, but I still think it's fine.
So we talked a lot about ships passing in the night last season. The ships have already passed at the start of round one. I mean, with that extra 4 point adjustment there, the Liam Will has already done a few overtakes, and that has inspired the name of this fantasy wrap up being the Shipping Report. So thank you for that one there, Liam. Carry on.
And so my good call was pivoting from Geordie Allen to Sinead Goldrick. And then I'm going to sneak in another one, which was sticking with my guns and not using extra cash to take Courtney Hodder up to Katie Brennan, because it leaves me with a bunch of extra cash this week. In terms of my bad call, I'd say I've put down Isabel Pritchard as my, you know, mid-priced pod. But I really don't feel like it was a huge mistake. I just think I underestimated how bad the Western Bulldogs are going to be, but we'll get onto that later. And then I think also probably over-relying on what we saw from Kate Lutkins in the practice match is probably my other mistake. And then in terms of my blind side, I nearly had to come up here and do the same thing that Jono did and say my blind side is Tamara Smith and having to apologise to Will because of my reaction. But thank good, because she was like the leading scorer in the ground at the end of the first quarter.
You were lucky Hawthorne decided to pull away because it meant that they didn't have to do as much in that back line.
I would also say that Tamara Smith just wasn't near the ball that much if it was in the back line anyway. Like Tilly Lucas Rod was still taking kick-ins, but I'm glad that I didn't have to come up here and do the same thing. I'd say that the thing that blindsided me with the most, and it's a bit of a theme at the moment, and it's Bonnie, but it's actually Bonnie Toogood's role in the first quarter. I think it was a deep full forward role only out of the goal square, which, to be perfectly honest, even if she hadn't been injured, I would have been considering trading out Bonnie anyway because it was horrific for scoring. I also think it's a horrendous mistake by the Bombers to do it. I think it's dumb to take your co-captain, who's just come off her best season ever, a top 10 player in the AFLW, and you switch up her role to something where she barely gets near the ball. I was fully blindsided by it.
Well, isn't it great that they don't have that option anymore? You know?
Oh, yeah, good.
Oh, wow.
That fills me with joy.
But yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people probably have missed in this whole Bonnie Toogood fiasco is that she was on 5 points midway through the second quarter, so she could have been a trade-out target this week anyway, but 6 to 8 weeks, not ideal. I'd also like to just say quickly before we move on to Mel's version of this that I'm in a similar boat with Kate Lutkins, as you said, Liam, specifically because I want Jono to say another apology because I didn't have Kate Lutkins on my field. And before the round started, and I quote, he said, "You need more Kate Lutkins in your life." And I did that. And I had Dana Fidner on field, swapped them around, and that cost me another sort of 20-odd points. So another thank you for Jono.
Hey, you're your own man, and you can make your own decisions. Thank you very much. I don't need responsibility for that. I need responsibility for the things that are definitely my fault.
This may be true, but I value your opinion so highly that I just couldn't resist.
Wow, so kind. Well, on to me then. Bowers down to me. Got a whopping 1,207, which isn't that grand compared to a lot of the people up the top, but I'm pretty happy with that. It ticked over the 1,200 mark at the after-game recalculations and I had a little party. So that was good. That means I'm ranked 1,264, which is 8,600 spots higher than I was this time last season. And I think that's the real win here.
Yeah.
I love that.
Disappointing. I needed to see more Ange Foley in your side when we got around the start of round one.
Yeah. The intrusive thoughts were there.
For context, I did what these guys did and threw all wisdom aside at the start of last season and decided to put Ange Foley in my side. She got a ridiculously low score. I don't know why I did that. But then as I was finalizing my team just before the game, Ange Foley popped up as an option in the price range. And I was like, ooh, do I do this? but no, I did not, luckily. Instead, I chose Hosking as a Sheeran replacement when we heard that Swanson was out and then Sheeran was out, and that was my good call. Pretty happy with that. Had a good feeling that she was going to be impactful at West Coast, and then Swanson's out kind of cleared up any uncertainty we had, and she was. But we will discuss that more in terms of do we believe it. My bad call was putting Smith on field over Tripodi, which is just so annoying given how much I have championed Tripodi in this preseason. And then last minute I was like, okay, on the bench you go. What was I doing? So yeah, that cost me quite a few points.
What if I didn't do that?
Yeah. What if I just reverse my strongest opinion in the preseason?
You got to champion your decisions for good or for bad, you know? I was right there with Will with Lutkins on my field for 19, you know? And I stand by it.
Yep. Stand behind your bad calls, I think. And my blindside was watching that West Coast game. As a Freo supporter, I was like, damn, might actually have some competition on the West this year.
Damn,
which I don't know. I both don't like it, but I also am very much here for it. I'm like, I love seeing them competitive, watching Daisy Pierce on the coverage, just like trying to show no emotion, but like hints coming through. It was a great game to watch. And I'm happy that West Coast are a bit more competitive this season. I'm excited for what they bring. Well, Will, do you want to take us through the watch and wait scoreboard?
Yes, the watch and wait scoreboard. This is where we sort of give you an update on where you need to be if you want to aim for that top 100 and how the top scorers of the week have gone. So the first round top scorer was Lucky Dog, coached by Lucy, with a massive 1397. Almost 20 points more than the next coach. Incredible work from what was a pretty unique team and kind of had to be given everyone else was a fair bit behind, so well done, Lucy. The top 100 marker was 1,285 points, which is where Benjamin's team, Kebab123, sits, which is just 100 points ahead of Liam and I. So you can see there's quite a bit of...
99 points ahead of me, Will. Just
that's true. There's a big difference between the numbers.
Just got the gulf between us. It's a bit misleading.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Those ships have passed a long time ago in the night. But yes, it just does show that at this stage of the season, it is still really close between rank 2000 and rank 100. Only 100 points, not much in it. In terms of the free kick league, we had 15 people in our open league, which you can still join. 15 people in our league, which were in that top 100, including the overall second place coach, Angela, who scored 1,378. So well done, Angela.
I also think at this point we should mention that currently the free kick team that we drafted last week, which I've called the Tamara Smith of it all, is on 1,218 points at rank 948, so it is currently better than all of our teams.
940! Thank you, Tam Smith. Damn, top 1,000.
I've always thought we were more than the sum of our parts. Look at us go.
Yeah. We put all of our collective ideas together, avoided a lot of the bad decisions that we made individually, and just made one team to rule them all.
Also, a ripperino to Angela there, because I checked immediately as soon as the game finished and she was first, and they did that slight recalculation at the end of the game and she bumped down to second. I was like, oh.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
That's still,
but still very impressive. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So let's have a look at the week that was. We're going to give a little bit of context in terms of what we saw in some of the game scores, some of the injuries and some of the suspensions. And wow, week one was a week of upsets. We've already alluded to some of it, but we saw West Coast coming in hot and they really stumped Richmond at the first half of that game. Richmond looked like they were excited for a cakewalk and then had to really crank into gear in the second half. And West Coast ended up with a 1-point win, which is very exciting for Daisy Pierce's debut coaching and a little bit concerning for Richmond. Then we also saw the Bulldogs v GWS, where GWS absolutely flogged Bulldogs here, 72-9. We were really hoping to see a new and improved Bulldogs team put something more out there, but maybe it takes a little bit longer than one preseason to rebuild your team. In terms of other surprises, we saw Fremantle beat Essendon, woohoo, at the Windy Hill, but this was largely in part, I would say, to Too Good disappearing in the second quarter. But it was a 64-21 point win there, which is quite unexpected given Fremantle been on the down and down and Bombers have been on the up and up.
I think we should also say, while Bonnie Too Good did get injured, also, was it Georgia Clark or Amber Clark?
Amber Clark.
Also injured in the same contest with concussion. So unfortunately, two injuries in the one contest to the Bombers, which really doesn't help.
Yeah, both at the same time. Don't love to see that. We saw a surprising win for St Kilda over the grand final contenders in the Suns, 74-20. St Kilda really put themselves together there, and I don't think anyone was expecting to see that win by so much as well. And then the final upset, we saw the grand final rematch with North coming in with something to prove, 78-34 against Brisbane. So many games were just being like, wow, didn't see that coming.
Yes, similar to Liam, I wasn't necessarily surprised to see North beating Brisbane in this game, but the manner with which they did it was just, they blew them off the park. It was quite something to behold, and I'm a bit worried about my Cats this week because I thought they put in a really good effort against Melbourne, a game they probably should have won, and prior to the season, I thought, oh, maybe we could take it up to North, and then I saw that and went, ooh, that's a scary prospect.
I just wanted to quickly say as well that the Giants have ended the ladder entered the week on top of the ladder, the first time they have ever been there, despite being one of the inaugural teams. So,
wow,
big excitement for them.
And with a measly percentage of 800.
It's just silly.
Yeah.
Just silly.
Crazy. And, I mean, Hawks breaking their 50-point barrier. Surprised you weren't going to jump in and say that there, Jono.
Oh, no, don't. There's a lot of excitement coming from the Hawks this year. Don't worry.
First of many exciting things to say, I'm sure. In terms of major injuries, Liam, do you want to run us through some of these?
Yeah, I think we all know the one off the top, and that's Bonnie Toogood, who's strained her MCL out for 6 to 8 weeks, so is a trade out for everybody. That's the only one that we have kind of locked in and confirmed are the fantasy relevant ones. We've also had Michaela Pauga left the game in the fourth quarter with what looked to be a rib or hip concern, didn't come back on.
Yeah, it was
on
ribs.
And ribs. Then Daisy Darcy, I think she's dislocated her elbow during the game. Now, she's come back on with a lot of strapping on it, but had some really low time on ground as a result. Will be interesting to see what actually comes out of that report. She did come back on ground and play in the midfield after that point, though, which was handy.
Mm.
I think she picked up the Gold Coast Suns MVP nomination of the round from their fans.
Yeah, so. She did, indeed.
Yeah, it's an impressive performance.
She was looking absolutely incredible. She scored 60-odd, but only in 55% time on ground. So I'm really bullish on what she's going to be like this year. Taylor Harris had a shoulder concern. Now, that was not the injury she missed the match sim or the preseason game with, but it was an injury she'd had earlier in the preseason. And it looks like it's really unstable because the injury that sent her off the ground looked pretty innocuous, and she looked like she was in some pretty extreme pain. So I'm not going to be shocked if she's got a really unstable shoulder at the moment. Now, also from that game, Georgie Presparkas, who'd missed the practice match with a quad injury, didn't look up to her normal standards. Also was getting a bit of work on the bench every single time she went off. So she definitely looks still hampered, and that showed in her score as well.
Also looked to have possibly tweaked an ankle as well at the end of the game. So
wow.
In a bit of pain, it was G Prez. So as a Geelong supporter, again, very much hoping that it's not too serious. But yeah, looked a bit worrying.
Yeah, Mel, you've written down on the run sheet nothing on Sabs. Do you think that Sabs might be running with an injury?
She had a really bad fall. Well, it looked really bad onto her ribs. She kind of like twisted, maybe potential on the back. But then I don't know who else was watching this game.
Yeah,
but
that
the
was
poor
me.
Thing. Yeah, obviously we were chatting about it for like an hour straight. But the poor thing, she's essential on ground. We saw her last season, pretty much 100% time on ground, rotating between ruck, tall forward, tall defender. She stayed on. She nominated for a couple more contests after that. But after every single kick or ruck tap, she would fall to the ground, re-landing on those ribs, or just like it looked like she couldn't quite expand her muscles enough to kick properly without copping a fall. And she stayed on for quite a while after that, but that has got to be sore, and I'm kind of as expecting an injury to come out of this.
Yeah, it was interesting. She's quite a resilient, strong player, Sabrina Frederick, and as you said, she basically got copped one in the ribs, and then in the very next contest took a contested mark on the goal line. So, you know, she continued to work her way through it, so hopefully with a few ice baths and a bit of treatment, she'll be right to go this week. And she scored incredibly well as well.
Yeah.
So if you were one of the coaches that had her, you'd be very happy. But yeah, definitely want to see how that plays out during the week.
Well, also from that game, we saw that Maddie Collier was out with a concussion. And then, there was one from the game we were talking about before. Sinead Goldrick, who had come in under a bit of an injury cloud, she had also low time on ground, and then in the fourth quarter looked to get her ankle trapped underneath her and was kind of hobbling for a little bit. Now, she did play on the rest of the game, but she was taking at least two stints on the bench every quarter. It's going to be very interesting to see what the Melbourne injury report says when it comes out on Tuesday, because I am a little bit concerned that she might be copping something that holds her out for a little bit of extra time.
Speaking of things that are going to make coaches quite upset when we do hear more about them, especially because there's some quite highly owned players here. Will, you have a bit of an update on the suspensions?
Yeah, I do. So that Maddie Collier concussion, that incident with Tani White has led to a 3-match ban. That's quite a big one. Ellie Gamble has also been suspended for a week, and possibly the most fantasy relevant one is Ellis O'Loughlin from North has copped a 1-week suspension for a tackle. So someone who I think people might have looked to pivot to from Too Good. So Ellis O'Loughlin out for the next week.
Yeah, that's not good because we kind of need her as an option. Okay, that was a good wrap-up of the week. Let's jump into our hot topics for heading into week two. We're going to chat through a Ridley's Believe It or Not, a injury impact for Too Good, and some rookie roulette. So let's start off with Ridley's Believe It or Not. Jono, do you want to talk us through what the segment is and then give us some insights?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, we're asking this because sometimes you can trust the players that score well in week one. Sometimes you can't. So if we want to look at last year, round one of 2023, we saw a lot of high scores early. There are some that we should have trusted. So take Bonnie Toogood, who put up 103 with her previous best career average being 60 in a season. And then she went on to average 100 for the rest of the season, had 6 scores over 100. Phenomenal. Same with Ali Morfitt, who put up a 94 in round one and then went on to be the highest averaging ruck in the game. On the flip side, though, there are players who put up massive scores that we should have ignored. So Jackie Parry had a 99 round one last year, went on to average 52 and never scored above 80 again. Kate Sermon put up a 98 and averaged 45 after that. Only went over 52 over that twice for the rest of the season, though.
I think that that was more a product of Geelong playing the Bulldogs, which is probably something else to believe or not, which is the Bulldogs will inflate a few scores this year, I reckon.
Oh, absolutely. This is why we need to go through and figure out, are these scores because of the matchup, or are they because of, you know, a role that we're expecting to see for the rest of the season? And sometimes these are really hard to gauge. So a couple that we saw last season that I feel like are similar situations that we've got this year, Bree Davey put up 131 in the opening round and was a very highly owned mid-pricer, but she only averaged 85 after that, had 100 plus once for the rest of the season. Mim Strom, who also put up a massive score this year, started last season very well with a 112 and averaged 75 for the rest of the season. So it's sort of these things where round one, we can't always expect it to be, you know, what happens for the rest of the season. I want to play a little quick game here, guys. Basically, who scored the most in round one last season? Can you take a guess?
Was it Bowers?
Jazz?
It was neither of those. It was end up a high averaging player. It was
Georgie Chrisparkus.
I'm pretty
sure I know the answer to this. I was about to say, I'm pretty sure I know the answer to this because you told me earlier. So
I did, which is why I cut you off. Yeah. But the season before, so sometimes it is a fantasy relevant player.
I remember
the
that.
Year before, though, I promise you have no idea who the highest averaging player, highest scoring player for week one was, because it was Sarah Hosking.
I don't think we would have predicted.
Yeah. So
I do remember that because Mel had called Sarah Hosking to play to watch. And Mel was crowing big time.
Oh, that doesn't sound familiar. Mel sounds like this week one wizard at this point. What's going on here?
Ange Foley?
Look, okay, I have an on season and then I have an off season. But last season was the off and we're back on, baby. We're back.
Yeah, look, 2 out of 3 is pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, I'll take it.
But anyway, we're looking at week one this year because there's been a lot of big scores that we probably need to talk about. And I think none better than Mel's pick that got vetoed, Ash McCarthy, putting up a 139. My question is, do we believe it? Mel, you're the McCarthy guru. What do you think?
I think that was both matchup dependent and something that's going to stay. I think that McCarthy is going to be a good scorer this season for the reasons I mentioned previously, but that being Bowers and Ange Stannett out, Frio have not had enough time to entirely pivot their game strategy, which has previously been based off a very high tackling midfield and one player doing a significant amount of work. If Ash McCarthy is taking that role from Bowers, which we saw somewhat in the practice game and then we saw again in this game, I think she's not going to be a Bowers in terms of scoring, but she's going to be taking the lion's share of points there. But flag in that Strom is also being very impactful here and taking a lot of points from Freo. But I think that she's going to maintain her scoring as a elite mid for this season, but I don't think it's going to be 139 again. I think 100 to 110 is probably more the bracket that we'll be looking at, thinking like an Anne Hatchard last season type range.
Yeah, that was probably what I was about to ask, is because I think that it looks like that Freo midfield is pretty tight this year, which is interesting, and McCarthy seems to be the main scorer in there. You've just answered the question, but in terms of what she averages, if she's averaging 100 to 110... is this now the last opportunity we sort of have to get her in before she starts becoming too pricey to jump aboard? Is she now someone that we have to try and get in now if we want to?
It's funny that she's only added 205 grand, which I thought she would have gone up a lot more than that. So I think this could be a good opportunity if you've got a trade for your midfield, but I don't know if she's a must-have. Like, I don't know if this is going to be happening all the time. And there's a few other players in those brackets that for the next few weeks we're going to be thinking about for the buy rounds anyway. So I think if she's one that you want, now's a good time to do it. But I don't know. Will? I mean, Liam?
Thank you. So my thought going into this game was, and I watched it live as well, extremely high number of ruck contests. And it also got me thinking about what we were saying about Fremantle this time last year, which was, again, they played another game that was extremely high number of tackles in both of the first two matchups. So they played West Coast, then Hawthorn. Fremantle had 98 tackles in that game last year. But then also, I think Mimstrom broke the record for the number of hitouts by one player with 45. But I think there were in excess, I think it was like 105 or 110 total ruck contests, which is, I can't verify that that's a record, but that sure seems astronomically high and unsustainably high, in the same way that when we watched round one last year, Adelaide against Port Adelaide, it was nearly the highest marked game of all time. And that was not sustained by how Port Adelaide or how Adelaide played for the rest of last year. As much as I do think that Ash McCarthy is probably going to be better than we expected, she looks to have taken well to the system, I don't know if she's a must-have, because I don't think she's going above... I don't even know if she gets to an Anne Hatchard level. I wouldn't be shocked if she sits at that maybe Ellie Blackburn, Maddie Prespakis level as the ceiling for what she can average for the rest of the year. And then I think for Mimstrom as well, I talked about her like in the practice mat, like in the ruck episode and the Fremantle episode, is like there's linear growth there, but I don't know if she's going to be this year's Ali Morford.
I'm looking at the stats here, and I think eight players in that game had nine tackles or above in the Freo Bombers game, which is eight of the top 16 in the league at this stage of the year.
Yeah, solid.
It feels like an anomaly more than a game plan.
In terms of things that we believe on this list, okay, Strom, we know that she's going to be an impactful ruck and a good option, but she's probably not going to get 133 again. I'm going to say definitely not, actually, and then watch her get 134. But I think Sabs Frederick is more of a lock if she's not injured, because of that role that she has. I saw the same requirement to be on field as we saw last season, which led to some really good scoring at the end of the season. I don't think she's necessarily going to be getting that level of scoring again, but I think she's a really important part of Collingwood's game plan, and she's going to have high time on ground. She's going to be rotated to where she's needed the most rather than going off. I can see her being a high-scoring ruck and potentially someone that you could upgrade to, or wait, she's quite expensive already.
Yeah.
But I think she's going to be one that we're seeing at the top end of the ruck list towards the end of the season.
This is another one where the opponent makes a massive difference. Now, Ali Morford played, but her time on ground was still in the 50s, and she did not look healthy and at her normal best self. And outside of Ali Morford, it's the same ruck duo that allowed Lucy Wales to score whatever it was, 120 in the practice match. So it's not a particularly strong group of backup rucks at Sydney, including Ali Morford, who is injured. Add on to the fact that it's at the tiny North Sydney Oval, which allows for more throw-ins and ruck contests than your typical ground. I think all of that combines for a great score for Sabs Frederick, but I still don't feel like she's we have to trust, like, that's the type of scoring she's going to be able to do all year.
I don't think anyone's going to put up 118 all year, aside from, you know, the elite mids. But at the same time, I'm looking at, you know, the top rucks from last year. You had Ali Morford, as you said, having low time on ground. Brianne Moody having to share quite extensively and not put up a big score as a result. I think of all the top line rucks, Sabrina Frederick is one that I would probably trust the most. She may not score 118 every week, but I liked that she wasn't ruck sharing. I liked that she was majoritively out there all day, as Mel was saying. I think this one I trust a little bit more. I don't think it's something you chase, because I hate trading in the ruck department. But if you're looking to change your ruck because you're not happy with who you picked, I'd be happy to go there.
Yeah, I would say, though, that I'd actually argue in favour of Mimstrom, because Sabs Frederick may actually get needed forward, whereas I don't think Mimstrom has that positional versatility, and Fremantle have picked some other players who can ruck around the ground.
Someone else we saw have a big first week was... I mean, this is deja vu then. The other Hosking on my good year, picking the right Hosking again. Jess Hosking getting 91 against...
Richmond.
Oh, Richmond. Yeah, just had a mind blank. Sorry, against Richmond on Friday. Do we think this is going to stay? I like the fact that she is in that midfield, and I think that she was particularly feisty in that game, given it was against the team that delisted her away from her twin sister in the last off-season. So I think she was coming in hot and angry, and she was just ripping the ball out of everyone's hands. So I don't know if we're going to see that performance every time, especially when Swanson comes back. But I think that she has shown her value that she's in the midfield, and she'll probably stay in a similar role even with Swanson's return. It might hamper her scoring a bit, but this is a midfielder listed as a defender.
Yeah, I think this is, of all the people on this list, this is the one that I'm probably going to chase. I really liked what she was doing. And even with Swanson coming back, she was sort of pushing up to stoppage from not starting in the CBAs, but off a flank. And I really liked that sort of rotating in, because it means even when Swanson comes back and takes up that midfield spot, she's probably going to be doing a similar thing. So I'm a big fan.
She was impacting up forward as well, which is great for the Eagles. And as you say, to be able to push up from the forward line is really, really good to see.
I'm a little bit concerned about the sustainability of this scoring. She had to kick two goals to do it. And I also think that there's definitely a case to be made for she's had midfield time in the past. She's not been a particularly good scorer. I don't know how sustainable it's going to be. And I can definitely see a world where West Coast are overawed and she is not going to score nearly as well. So I don't know if you need to chase.
I don't think it's one where I'm expecting her to score an 87 every week. That's unrealistic. But she only needs at her price to score a 50 for me to be happy. She's priced at 40, just pushed up to 45. I'm not lost. I'm happy with that.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm chasing it because she's already gone so up so much because of that great score. Like, good on anyone who picked her. It's just like I'm wary.
One player that I was really excited to see on the weekend was Eliza West, who, as a Hawthorn mid and our new vice captain, was everything you wanted to see. She was tackling everywhere. She was so dominant in that midfield. I'm keen to know if it's just my Hawk bias or if there's anyone else keen on this pick?
It's just your Hawk bias. She handballs too much. She handballs way too much. 22 handballs. That was the one thing I would have... If she kicked it more and scored less, I would have been more on board.
It wasn't a game for kicking, you know? It was too windy. The wind. She was just running through it. The Hawks were handball happy for sure, but she put up 106. That's all you want.
Exactly why I think she scored so well, because the game suited her number one way of playing, which is handball, 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 handball. She averages like double the number of handballs as kicks. It's just not good for fantasy scoring sustainably.
Maybe what we need to see is her performance when it's not so windy to see if those handballs remain. Unless Jono's locked in anyway.
Look, I'm happy to leave it a little while longer, but I'm just saying I'm glad I've got her in a keeper league. That's for sure.
That's fair.
I can respect that. So that was some of our players that had a super start. We've got a couple that had a slow start, and it's a question of, did they just not to get to show their full potential in this game? Are they still players that we can consider trading into? Does that now make them a little bit underpriced? I'm going to go around and with one each, given the time. Liam, who do you think had a slow start that still got value there?
The Western Bulldogs. Just in general.
Who, though? You're not going to bring the whole team in?
It's not. I'm not going to mention every player, but it's the fact that the Western Bulldogs only scored 700 total fantasy points, which would have been the lowest for any team if it was last year. That meant that Ellie Blackburn had a market share percentage of 13.5, and she didn't even score 100. And Izzy Pritchard and Alice Edmonds scored 70s and had market shares over 10%. The question is, and like I don't know the answer, but like, are the Western Bulldogs going to be this bad at scoring? They had 19 total marks, 10 of which were intercept marks. So they're just not kicking it around very well. Their midfield got destroyed by a team that I think we both, or that we all felt, were probably in the bottom third of the table this year. Can the Western Bulldogs improve so that some of these players that score well on a relative level to the team cannot have scores in the 70s?
That is a good question.
Any thoughts? Like, I think that there's some improvement there, but that was also such a crap loss that I'd be worried.
I do worry for the Bulldogs this year. GWS, as you said, not a team that we expected to come out and blast the Bulldogs like that, and they have Yeah, I do worry about it. With the exception of a couple of players like a Blackburn and Edmonds, I think I'm probably keen to steer clear of a fair few of them.
Yeah, and that does mean that I think that Elizabeth Georgis-Dathis, I don't think she's going to average 5 for the season, but I think a much lower score than last year if this game style persists. And then same goes for Ellie Gavala, sitting deep forward, not really getting that midfield time that we wanted to see. I think that they're both players that are going to average lower than we would have expected at the start of the season, and so are trades.
Yep. Will, what do you reckon about Jordy Allen? She only scored a 25. Do we expect that to be her score this season based on her role, or is there more to show?
I think there's more to show, but the role wasn't ideal. We have seen her play much more up on the wing and as a more of a traditional running, distributing halfback flanker, but she was playing a bit more of a defensive role against the Swans, which, as evidenced by her 25, doesn't really suit fantasy scoring. Mm. I think she will do better than that as the season goes on, but I'm not sure that there's a huge amount of upside there. I think that if you have the luxury, I'd probably be moving her on. I think that's probably the safest thing. I think that she will probably average maybe somewhere between 40 and 50, which means you'll probably lose a bit of money.
I find she's quite an inconsistent player. You look at her scoring history, it's very much up and down, and this is kind of the challenge with trying to ride a player like that.
Look, the player... Jono, what do you... you go.
The player that I was keen to talk about was Kate Lutkins, because only a 19, I've obviously put a lot of my reputation on this player. But I'm going to back her in. I think North Melbourne is clinical in the way that they move the ball forward compared to a lot of teams, and her strength is her strength. It's her intercept marking. I think she's going to be a lot better in future efforts where she is not playing on, you know, such terrific forwards with such great ball coming in. It's going to be a very different way of playing.
Counterpoint to that, North Melbourne were one of the easiest teams for defenders to score against last year, precisely because they were so inefficient going inside 50. Now, they weren't as inefficient yesterday, but I also would be concerned a bit for Kate Lutkins if that's the type of performance we're going to put up, because I just don't think she looked as quick as she did. Even in the practice match, she kind of looked a little bit slow and out off pace. So I'm pretty concerned about keeping her in my side.
Okay, well, that's a good wrap on some of the players that we should be thinking about a little bit more coming into this next week. Let's move on to our second hot topic, which is injury impact for Bonnie Toogood. I can tell Liam's just itching to start talking about Toogood some more, but before I hand you over the reins, I'm going to set the scene a little bit here. So she was on 5 points in the first quarter. Even though she was on ground for most of the first quarter, she looked like she was staying a kick or two away from the ball from my viewing. Liam, please add if you've got different opinions there. But no, in doing a bit more of the defensive work. And it was a quarter where the wind was really helping the Bombers. Windy Hill is really directional in where the wind goes, who gets the scores, kind of like we had at Kinetic Stadium as well. Then at the start of the second quarter, she had a collision where Amber Clark kind of ran into her. Amber Clark's fallen back and concussed herself, and Bonnie Toogood's fallen down on her knee. I think she might have gotten up and played for another couple of minutes. I don't know if she walked straight off.
She jogged off. She tried to, like, she was hobbling after, her knee had kind of got, like, buckled by the hit from Amber Clark.
Yep. And then she's taken herself off. Meanwhile, Amber Clark is getting stretchered off, so that was probably where all the attention was. So Toogood, and then we heard the confirmation earlier today, she's been ruled out for 6 to 8 weeks with an MCL injury. Toogood is no good, and we need to think of a replacement. So we've got some options of who we can be trading down to. Liam, what are you currently thinking?
Well, if you don't have Kate Hoare, just get her. Bring her in. It's going to cost you some cash, so it's going to be unfortunate given how much more expensive she was than Kate Hoare to start the season. But I think that's the number one spot to go. I think the question then becomes, if you're going on like a premium that we know about, are you going with the hot hand in on your tie, or are you leaning more towards an underperformer but 70 averaging player from last year in KB or Gemma Horton? I think I'm leaning more towards, well, actually it's kind of tough. Like, I think KB probably was on track for about a 70 if she could kick straight on the weekend.
Yeah, that would have been very frustrating.
Yeah, it was very frustrating for Richmond as well, because as much as we talked about how good West Coast were, that Richmond probably should have won. Or like it's tossing that up with Tighe, which that was an incredible performance, but the Bombers were without the defender that played on her last year, Brooke Brown. I'm really torn on this one. I think it's like a 250k difference. It's going to very much depend on who else I want to trade in that might dictate who I go to.
You had mentioned in your good call that you didn't trade KB in and that you stayed with Courtney Hodder or something to that effect. Has your opinion of KB changed since that game? Or is it now out of necessity?
It's more just out of necessity now. Like, I think KB played all right. She just couldn't kick straight and probably should have had a few times where she dropped some marks or should have got to some marks. So I think I prefer the role I saw from Hodder. So if you don't have Courtney Hodder, I wouldn't mind trading her in as well. But I already have her. So I'm, tossing up Tighe and Brennan.
Yep. Well, I guess Alyssa Loughlin was an option until you notified us earlier of her suspension. Who are you thinking now?
Yeah, I'm wondering if I go for someone a bit lower so I can maybe improve a player like Lutkins, use that money elsewhere. A couple of options I've been looking at. Zali Friswell, because my Geelong bias always has to come out first. Looked really, really good on the wing. They were using her quite a bit. So an option if you wanted to save about 400k. Another one that I'm quite keen on is Ash Saint, who I know Jono's a very big advocate for. Looked pretty good against Adelaide. Has a very good matchup this week against the Western Bulldogs. So if you want to hope for a player who could score big based on opponent, Ash Saint's another one. There are a few other players. We've seen a couple of Hawthorn players who have done quite well. Mal, I know you're pretty keen on Casey Sheriff.
Yeah, this was my thinking of if I go down to someone within, quite substantially, take some extra cash, who do I like? And Sheriff looked good at the game on Sunday. I mean, I know that her 67 that she scored was inflated by the fact that she had two goals. I believe that was her that had the Miley Cyrus Best of Both Worlds.
I believe you mean the Hannah Montana Best of Both Worlds. Thank you very much.
Wait, Miley Cyrus, what?
Montana
McKinnon
Best of Both Worlds.
Just the music after every goal. It was a quality time. Way to keep us dancing on the sidelines in a very cold, biting wind.
Yes, and that definitely inflated her score a bit, but she had some CBA attendance. She was running through the midfield a bit. She looked like a good set of hands there for the components. I do like it. I think it's a good option out of the price bracket. I'm not saying it's the best option. I'm not saying it's without its faults, but I had not yet considered Ash Saint, and I am liking that Bulldogs matchup, so... Once again, deciding my trades from the episode. Liam?
One other player that we probably should mention, and I feel a bit like Will for doing it, but had CBAs, has scored as a premium in their line before, is Chelsea Randall. So didn't have an amazing score, but was a CBA dominant player. Now, at the very least, I think it's going to be an option that people will throw up, and I've seen it online already. My question is, do I think that she is going to stay in that CBA role? Because Tia Charlton was out, which I do think affects their balance a little bit. I also believe that it's going to be an ongoing experiment with Anne Hatchard as well, who spent a lot of the game rolling up off half forward. I do wonder if that experiment lasts. So I'm not putting my name or staking claim to Chelsea Randall. I have been on other podcasts. I have, suggested that it's a terrible idea to start the season with her. But I think the role that we saw on the weekend is at least something to watch out for in the coming weeks.
You say that the Hatchard role rolling up forward might be a bit of an experiment and it'll be over. But I've got to say, I didn't watch that game. One of the only ones I didn't. But wow, it looked like it worked. She beat Noffy.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of the concern for me, actually, with Adelaide. Hatchard had a massive second half, and Noffy got a tag from Maria Maloney the latter half of the third quarter and the fourth quarter, which kind of stunted her scoring, because she's just such a... Like, Maria Maloney is a great runner and was able to kind of stick with her. So I definitely think there's something to be said for, Hatchard may actually be the benefit from Scorer, and the reason why she's moved forward is to break those tags that she would typically get in the midfield.
So, yeah, that's quite a few good options we've got there. Liam, in terms of how we are actually going to decide which of these players or a different one you're going to do your trades for Too Good, how are you going about this?
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to like a three-tiered process. So up the top, like the best score we saw from the forwards on the weekend was Anya Targ. If you don't already have Kate Hall, sorry, if you already have Kate Hall, I think the thing that you'd want to decide on is like, is that scoring level going to be sustainable? At which point anything above like 90 will be enough to trade her in as a top five forward for the rest of the year. I think the next question to ask yourself is, do you have the kind of forwards in your rookies where if you were to bring in a lower price player, let's say it's an Izzy Huntington, for example, a forward who scored well enough on the weekend, could you downgrade Bonnie Toogood to allow you to upgrade on another line? Let's say you want to take Kate Lutkins up to a premium defender, a Beck Webster, an Isla Sheeran if she's back. I think that's entirely possible. But you've got to consider, if you've already got two forward rookies, I don't know if we've got that many options that we like. And then in terms of the other mid-priced options, I really do think it's going to be what's the best you can kind of get to whilst considering upgrades on other lines that you might want to do. So if you want to bring in another rookie, I think you might just have to bear with it and take a downgrade to a Friswell, to a Saint, to a Bodie, to a Sheriff, to allow you to upgrade on other lines, because in all likelihood, most of the forwards we're going to trade in are going to average somewhere in the high 50s, low 60s.
Hmm. And which one of those are you leaning towards?
Paul, I had been thinking about trading Alice O'Loughlin right before recording started, so I'm completely thrown at this stage, to be perfectly honest.
Hmm. Okay, well, maybe ponder, and then you can tell us what you're going to do when it gets to the trade section.
Yeah, I think Liam and I were talking about this today. I've got a very different approach to how I'm doing it. I'm less concerned with at the forward I'm bringing in, because I do think they're all going to score within a 10-point band. I'm more looking at what am I doing with my other two trades, and therefore how much money do I have left over to bring in a forward. So I was pretty keen on getting in Sashi Syme and Jess Hosking, and so figuring out who my other trade outs are that get me there, and then how much money I have left over from Bonnie Toogood, has currently left me with enough money for Casey Sheriff at the moment.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at it in a similar way. I think if I go for someone like an Ash Saint or a Zali Friswell, I can go for a Hosking as well. And I can also, another trade that is still pinging around in my head is whether I do go for Ash McCarthy. She's almost the exact same price as Britt Bonici, so I can do a sideways trade there. So it'll be interesting to see how I end up shaping up, because there are so many different ways we can look at this, and they range from what Liam's saying to what Jono's saying and everywhere in between. And I've probably thrown up just about every single one of them in the last 3 to 4 hours.
Nice. And just to complete it, we've got two opposite strategies here. Will has tested all options, and I've tested none. So we bring a complete set. let's move on to Rookie Roulette. This is going to be quite interesting because we've got a few names to get through, and some of them I definitely need to be thinking about bringing in. In terms of the defenders, overall, we had a few defenders that we were quite excited for with the rookies, and not a lot of them really showed us what we were expecting to see here. Will, do you want to run us through some?
Yeah, for sure. So the most highly owned rookies in the back line were Lulu Beattie, Kate Lutkins, and Dana Finn. Beattie, 25 points. Lutkins, 19 points. Finn was probably the best of the lot, with 44 points. Another player who a lot of people went for was Serene Watson. We've talked about that a little bit and whether that role will continue. 25% had that. I'm going to throw this one to you, Jono. Serene Watson, do you reckon she keeps improving, or do you reckon that that lower scores is about where she's going to be?
It really worried me that that's what she scored, because that was so close to her average from previous seasons. I do think she's got it in her, but I wouldn't be against moving her on. I think I'm more likely to move her on this week than Kate Lutkins. So It's just really disappointing because I thought that role she had in the practice game was so promising, but in what ended up being a similar game against the Gold Coast where they'd ran all over them, it just wasn't there.
I actually think it's very different to that West Coast game because the Gold Coast Suns actually ran all over the Saints and had more possessions, more clearances, more marks, more everything, and St Kilda were just super direct. And that's the thing that worried me most, is Serene Watson would often set herself up for a switch and St Kilda literally just went straight every single time.
It's frustrating. I think the Carlton defenders are ones that I'm not as concerned about just because that was such a windy day. They tried to switch all the time and the kicks just went haywire. But yeah, it's a tough area to be trying to find a rookie from.
I think Dana Finn looked the best so far. She had quite a number of times where she looked to be in the right spot to get a switch and the ball would go up in the air and it'd swirl around and no mark would happen. So I think she's the fieldable option of the defender rookies at the moment.
Yeah, funnily enough, another Carlton rookie, Lawson Tavern, scored 49, 9% owned, ended up being the best one despite conventional wisdom saying you don't pick key defenders, which just shows how much of a roulette this really was.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I've got Finn and I'm happy with that score. Lutkins, less so. I think that's trade-out worthy. But in terms of some of the midfield rookies, I mean, this is where the magic happened. Goody, coming to the table, exactly as we expected. Jono, do you want to run us through some of the other rookies that performed really well in the midfield?
Yeah, I feel like we barely had too many of the midfield rookies go that poorly. So Sinead Goody put up a 75 and seemed to do it comfortably. I think she didn't even have a single CBA and yet, you know, put up a massive score, got the Rising Star Award, is coming up against the Bulldogs this week and should cash in so well. And the only player in the only rookie midfielder that managed to outscore her was her teammate Sashi Syme, who was phenomenal for the Power. So an 83, I think that's a player that I'm probably going to target this week, and it's going to be a tough decision which of them I end up playing on my field. Other rookies, we had Matea Breed put up 69, and honestly, so exciting as a Hawks supporter to watch how she was in that game. In that second quarter, I think she had 40 points, but more importantly, kicked a massive goal, was just crashing through players, could barely be tackled, looked so strong, and I think she's going to be very, very good. It was a little alarming late in the game when she moved forward. It's hard to say whether or not that was... It looked a little bit like we were throwing different players. So if you look at that last quarter, Jess Vukic was our ruck almost exclusively that quarter rather than Lucy Wales. It looked a little bit like we were trying things out as if the game was done. I don't know if that's true.
On
I don't necessarily trust
massive
it.
Lead.
Yeah.
But I will say Breed was in the forward in the third quarter too. And she looked good. I think that's just...
Well, that was her... She was only spending half the time in the midfield, half the time forward. She was rotating between the two. So I'm not as worried about her having periods there. I'm worried about her spending the whole last quarter in the forward line.
I think she just looked really good in that third quarter doing it. That's the thing that alarms me. Like sometimes playing as that deep forward, you want our midfielders to do okay, but enough. You're like, oh, just go back in the middle, like stay there. That's your best role. I think that's my only... It's just a tiny little flag. It's like a little Tibetan, like non-normal size flag.
Yeah, we also had Casey Sheriff kicking goals from 50 in that last quarter. I don't like the ball was just going long. In the third quarter, it kept falling short. You had to hit the target. So I get your concern. I'm not worried about it. I think in terms of other rookies, I think Piper Window did enough that I wouldn't be worried. I think, was it Liam, you were saying that there was some sort of injury concern? Am I misinterpreting that?
Yeah, so she'd had a bit of an ankle roll in the practice match. Now, she wasn't on the injury report whatsoever last week. So I'm not reading too much into it. She just looked a bit more like a rookie than her teammate Goody. So it feels like she really underperformed, but in the context of it, it wasn't outrageous.
Yeah. The other one that I was excited to see was, didn't put up a big score, but Michaela Williamson had, I think it was a mid-40s score. But geez, she was everywhere. If she could just hold her marks, you know, and not just run straight into trouble when she gets the ball, I feel like she's going to put up a big score very soon. So I wouldn't be prioritizing trading out any of your mid rookies. maybe targeting some more. If you're not happy with, you know, your M4 as a mid-pricer that didn't pay off, then I'd maybe target someone else. But I think most of them are pretty reliable.
Would you consider upgrading Piper Window to Saatchi Sime?
I would definitely consider it because I really, really liked what Sime was doing. I don't think it should be top priority, but it's a more than respectable trade this week.
Well, I'm glad you said that because that is the trade that I had just clicked as you asked that question. And then in the forwards, I mean, if we've got potential in the rookie in the midfielders to go chasing for, that we're going to go rookie to well-performing rookie to well-performing rookie with a window to Sime. The forwards was some of the more questionable performances. We saw, unfortunately, like Paulger had a good score of 49, but there was that injury concern there. Was that in the last quarter or so?
Yeah, it was in the last quarter, about 12 minutes to go in the last.
Yep. McKee had a 40, which I'm pretty happy with. It looked like she had that same kind of role that we saw in the Prakki match there, 19% owned, and that is significant improvement from the Christy Lee Weston-Turner, who we had kind of cooled on from the Prakki games because it looked like she wasn't being able to make a big impact on the game from forward, in her role forward, sorry, and she only got 11 points there. So for the 14% that own her, maybe consider swapping to a different Bulldogs rookie there. Izzy Huntington, though, 54. That looked pretty good. She looked quite comfortable back there. Are any of you guys considering this trade?
Look, potentially. It's one of the various permutations that I have been looking at. Izzy Huntington as a cheaper option.
I really like this. I really like this option.
Mm.
She scored really well in what was a matchup. The ball didn't live anywhere near the defence.
So that's a forward option there. I think someone might be, like, potentially we could be trading out of EK Smith, who only scored a 23, so that could be a potential upgrade if you're willing to do a rookie swap so early in the season. And then we also saw Tripodi with a great 44. Unfortunately, I didn't get to watch all of this game. Do we have a confirmation on her time in the midfield?
Time on the midfield, really good. Had some great moments. Gave away a few free kicks in the second half, which we don't love. The only flag is her time on ground. Definitely looked to be flagging as the match ended in the extreme heat up in Brisbane. So I don't know if she's going to be a great scorer for us, but probably a fieldable rookie for the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not going to be that hot when she plays Geelong next week, so that's a good sign if it's heat related. Excellent. Any other forward rookies you guys want to talk about? No? Okay, let's get into Captain's Corner. Captain Planet, take it away.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's a nickname that I'm really loving at the moment. So in terms of my number one captain pick for this week, it should come as no surprise that it's Ebony Marinoff, because I fully expect Adelaide to try and replicate their high-pressure, high-tackle game that they had on the weekend. And if we think Gene Nanscorn can score 80-something points in a half in the first half, I reckon that Marinoff is capable of doing 100 points in a half, if we're being perfectly honest with ourselves. So she's my number one target this week. A player that I also think can score pretty highly will be Charlie Rowbottom, unsurprisingly, number two, second week in a row, because I also think that Carlton love a game where the ball spends a lot of time really close to the centre of the ground, and they really do often try and rely on their movement from stoppage. I think that Rowbottom will find no match for her when it comes to that game. And then the final player that I actually think is in my top three is Anne Hatchard, because I too think that she ended up having 12 or 11 tackles on the weekend. She looked great coming off that half forward line. So they'd be my top three captain picks for this week. Actually, before we leave, the one player I did want to talk about was Jazz Garner. Sorry, I completely forgot to write this down, but Jazz Garner looked good, not amazing in the first half, and then didn't spend that much time as a CBA midfielder in the second half. Do we worry that she might spend a little bit of extra time off the ground or playing forward this week up against Geelong, who she had 150-odd points against last year?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm not sure I necessarily worry about it, but I think Jazz Garner's the sort of player that we start to use that word worry when she's only scoring 100 as opposed to 120. So if that's your benchmark for worry, then yes, it's worry time. It's really hard to say, I think, with Garner, because we know how good she can be. Even in a forward role, she can tear a game apart. I think it's probably not the time to worry yet. But if we do see it, as you say, Liam, and that influence is a bit limited, I think I'd be probably starting to think maybe I'm losing a bit more money than I'm gaining points. Do a sideways trade.
Yeah. And so then the final thing I wanted to say about captains is I think it's going to be a running theme this season. We're going to pick players that go up against the Western Bulldogs. Unfortunately, I don't know if Port Adelaide have a proven extremely high scorer, albeit I will not be surprised if Sinead Goody puts up 100 plus this week in the same way that she did against the practice game against Melbourne.
I dare you to captain her.
No.
At least a vice-captain for a Friday night game.
They play the first game of the round. I actually don't think it's completely insane to put your VC on Sinead Goody. I don't know if I'll do it, but it would be funny for the memes like to have it up there.
Do you need a non-playing player to put your captain on then, or can it just be someone on your bench?
No, you need a non-playing player, which actually we didn't even talk about in the rookies, which was Alish O'Dowd, the ruck, who scored 60 and was points. Also injured. Who rolled her ankle. We've also heard nothing about it. But there's almost part of me that goes, a nice little two-week injury for a player that looked really good. We'll have a low break-even cash generator later in the year. But give us a nice little red dot for a few weeks. I'm not against it.
That would be nice. That way you don't need to trade into a red dot. Exactly. Well, speaking of trades, let's have a little look at our trade plans as of now, which are definitely going to change going forward, and a point of weakness that we recognise in ourselves that we're just going to announce to the group and hope that we don't fall victim to. I might start on my trades. I know I need too good to go, but I've got a question mark as to who else I trade out around. Is it Lutkins? Is it Benici? Is it the Smith, the rookie, who's not going to be getting me any cash? These are all good options, but how do I decide on the urgency level behind those? And then how do I capitalise on some of the rookies that I want, that I wish I started with, being Syme and Breed? Essentially, how do I make all of those things happen in three trades? And my point of weakness is that I am a sucker for a Freo player, having broken my team twice for Bowers last season. And we've got some very high averaging Freo players at the moment. Ash McCarthy, we've got Mim Strom, we've got my favourite Onya Tai. How do I bring in all three of these players and have them in my side? Because that'll make me happy.
On the one hand, we've got three Freo players. On the other, we've got three trades. This just seems like a match made in heaven here.
I reckon trade out Jess Allen and bring in Mim Strom right now. That's the most important thing to do on my side.
Yeah. Using the cash from Ebony Marinoff, of course. Yeah,
yeah, down to Ash McCarthy. Can you imagine? Will, what are you thinking?
I have genuinely changed my trade plans about six times over the course of this episode, so I'm just going to run with what my original trade plan was. So, too good to Ash Saint, I think, is the one trade that I'm certain to do. I'm really keen on that. Lutkins to Hosking seems to be a nice logical one to go on there, and I can trade Benici to McCarthy, or I can trade possibly another player. If Pong is out injured, I can trade her to Izzy Huntington. A lot will come down to that injury list from the Giants. But at this stage, too good to Ash Saint is probably my number one trade. My point of weakness is not a point of weakness, it's a point of strength, which is picking players that have very low ownership. And I can't shake the feeling that I should have picked Lauren Wakefa. So, to get extra money, there's 200,000 extra money there if I go Wales to Wakefa. And that is the trade that just, it can't escape my mind, even though it's completely unnecessary.
Do it. And then report back. And meanwhile, Jono, what are you going to do?
I am going to be bringing in Sashi Syme and almost certainly Jess Hosking. The how I do that, I have no idea, because I'm really struggling with my trade outs. I think I started with a few too many slow burns, where there are players like Kez Peterson, Kate Lutkins, Lucy Wales, Britt Bonici. I expect them all to do better as the season goes on, but right now they are hurting my side. So who am I backing in? Who am I fading is going to be my question of the week. Point of weakness at the moment is definitely me. I have gone against so many of my rules this season, and I know that as coach of my team at the moment, I'm out of contract at the end of the season. If I want to go again in 2025, I need to pull my thumb out. So big moves this week. Big decisions are coming up.
Okay, fair. But you are not allowed to put yourself as a point of weakness next week.
No, you can't give the minus three to the same player 2 weeks in a row. That's fair.
Exactly. Especially not the coach. And Liam, what are you thinking?
I too am very keen on bringing in Saatchi Syme if the money can afford it. I think the thing I have to toss up is that Piper window to Saatchi Syme trade, because I really liked the Syme role. And then it's just trying to find a forward and defender combination that I like for getting rid of Lutkins and Too Good. Yeah, there is a world where I could go instead, actually turn Izzy Pritchard into an Onya Tyke, which would then allow me to turn, you know, an EK Smith into Saatchi Syme, kind of do a bit of a reshuffle, have two mid rookies. But I don't know if I want to commit to that structure because, again, I think we can get overconfident on some scoring in week one, and then all I've done is sign up for extra rookies on field in places I don't want them.
I just figured out what I'm going to do. Kate Lutkins to Tam Smith. It fits. It uses all the rest of my money.
I think that this is probably something we should all be doing. I can't see any way it could go wrong. Lock it in.
It's locked in. And now watch me forget about that until the game starts on the weekend. Okay, well, that was a good wrap-up of the first week. Hope you guys had fun. Yeah. Woo. You still having fun, Jono? Still feeling good?
Didn't realise that was a call and respond one.
Sorry, is this where we were?
Will, are you having fun? Tell us to move. Yeah. good, well, for any of our listeners that want to listen to us have more fun next week, you can find our content on two different streams. We've got the Free Kick stream and the official AFLW Fantasy podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on socials. We're on Twitter, Insta, and YouTube at Free Kick W Pod. We will be having articles out on the AFLW website coming out this Wednesday, looking at some buy-sell options, I believe. Join our league. It's not too late. We do love to see how many of our league players end up in the top 100. So we'll be cheering you all on. And Liam, I'm going to throw to you to post that code later on Twitter.
But yep, I can do that. And it'll be in the bio for this week's episode too.
Great. That saves me reading it out. Liam, where can they find you on socials?
They could find me on Twitter /X at LiamAFLWFantasy.
And you can find me, Jono, on Twitter at FreeKickJono.
And you can find me, Will, at FreeKickWill.
I am FreeKickMel. You can find me on Twitter. Until then, chat to you next time.
See everyone.
Bye.
See ya.